welcome. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. It's a time when even people who don't love sports or TV are drawn to watch the drama of international competition play out in what looks like a dreamy winterscape in Russia. The Sochi Winter Games are the most expensive in Olympic history, estimated to cost more than $50 billion. The nation's Dave Zirin says the scale of corruption in Russia is unlike anything we've ever seen at any other Olympics. But a colleague also writing in The Nation criticizes American media coverage of the Russian-hosted games. Stephen Cohn writes, American media on Russian today are less objective, less balanced, more conformist, and scarcely less ideological than when they covered the Soviet Russia during the Cold War. So how should an event like the Winter Olympics be covered? What kinds of stories interest you as a reader or a listener? And how much context do you want, and how much do you just want to watch the beautiful athletes? How does coverage of the Sochi Games compare with previous Olympic coverage? Well, to talk about all of that, we're joined by three journalists who've been reporting on various aspects of Sochi and have grappled with these questions and more, and they'll help us analyze U.S. media portrayals and compare them with international coverage. We welcome Guillaume Pitron, who's an investigative journalist and a documentary maker. His piece, The Sochi Games, appears in the latest edition of English Le Monde Diplomatique, and he joins us from Paris. Hi, Guillaume.
Hi. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, thank you for being with us. Fred Weir is the Moscow correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, and he's joining us from the Russian capital. Hi, Fred.
Hi.
And from Holland, we're joined by documentary photographer Rob Hornstra. Rob's latest work, The Sochi Project, tells the story of Sochi, Russia, and he and his colleagues spent 5 years documenting Sochi for the Photojournalism and Reporting Project. Rob is the winner of the 2012 World Press Photo Contest. Hi, Rob.
Hello.
So we always start our Friday show by giving kudos to a journalist who's done a good job this week, and if possible, I'd love to hear from each of you about where you saw great Sochi coverage this week, or you can give a shout-out to somebody else. Fred, do you want to start us off?
Well, okay. From my perch here in Moscow, I watched the Russians, and I'm just amazed at how totally popular, absorbing, especially the opening ceremony was. I mean, after that, everybody gravitates to their own favorite sports, you know, whether it's figure skating or hockey. But the opening ceremonies, according to statistics, were watched by two-thirds of the entire Russian population, either live or in reruns within a 24-hour period. And that's amazing. That is like two out of three of all Russians watched it. And it is, of course, there's blanket coverage, and everybody is watching. School children were given time off to watch the games. Soldiers, Russian soldiers, are given 4 hours, 3 hours every day to watch. It is just amazing how this has come together in a lot of ways. It's come together for Putin, I guess, that the games have just made Russians feel great.
And we'll talk more about how they're being covered in Russia. That's Fred Weir of the Christian Science Monitor. Let's hear from Guillaume. Guillaume, anything that you want to give a shout-out to in terms of coverage this week?
Well, I must admit, I just come back from Africa, where I was for the last 2 weeks, so I haven't covered I haven't followed the news much recently about the games, but there's another thing I can talk to you about, another nice piece of reporting in Europe, if you want.
Great.
You know, I have followed the work of a journalist, a photographer whose name is Valerio Vincenzo. He's an Italian photographer, and he's been doing tremendous work for the last months, and still being published in France. About the name of the work is Borderline, and Valerio Vincenzo has been traveling all around the former borders of the European Union, and he's been doing pictures about it. And it's very interesting because these borders have disappeared, and all the work is about these borders that you don't see. So you see, for example, two guys having a drink at a terrace somewhere between Netherlands and Belgium. And actually, you know, one is drinking the beer on the Netherlands side, and the other is drinking the beer on the Belgium side. And the border is still crossing in the middle of them, for example. So it shows, for example, you know, how these borders, which used to be a purpose of war only 60 years ago, just don't exist anymore. And what amazing how amazing it is to have this European Union construction today. And the pictures go to the, you know, lakes and mountains, or just, you know, green fields in the middle of nowhere. And all these places are places where the borders used to be, and you couldn't cross them at the time. And today there's just nothing. You can just go freely. And I think that's a very interesting piece of work.
All right, so a story about dissolving borders from Guillaume. How about you, Rob? Anything that you want to point out for us?
Well, of course, I'm a photographer, so I would like to promote a photo book, because I'm completely addicted to photo books. Actually, I didn't think about a photo book about the region around Sochi, and then it would have been
you
about
made
the
one.
North Caucasus. Sorry?
You've made one.
Yeah, I did choose. I chose The Grey Line from Joe Madsen Scott, which is absolutely a fantastic book. It's a book about, actually, and that's maybe the connection with Russia or with Sochi. This is also a book about hermetically sealed systems, government systems. And what Madsen Scott did was she made a book about the British and American soldiers who were fighting in the Iraq War. So this book, in a way, celebrates the 10 years after the invasion of Iraq. And what she found out, because she wanted to hear the stories from these soldiers, but the Grey Line, so that's the title of the book, the focus of this book is actually much more on the sealed systems of the government, of the UK government and the US government. And, I mean, we are always talking about democracy and beautiful governments and criticizing maybe more the Russian government, but, of course, sometimes it's also very good to look critically towards our own Western democracies.
And that's called The Grey Line. All right, so let's talk about Sochi. And as you mentioned, it has been getting a lot of negative coverage. I wonder, just to start us off, as Olympics, right, this kind of celebration of sport and grit and international competition and goodwill, how do each of you think that the games compare with past winter contests or past Olympics? Why don't we start with you, Fred?
Well, I'm not a big sports fan, but I certainly think that if you go by things like television audiences, apparently it's up 10% over Vancouver, which was the last Winter Games. It does certainly seem here in Russia that people are just totally transfixed by it. It is so far, you know, knock wood, keep fingers crossed, a great spectacle that has not been marred by any accidents or acts of terrorism, and let's hope it stays that way. So, as long as it does, it seems destined to be one of the most popular events of the year.
And how about, what are you seeing in France, Guillaume?
What do we think in France generally about the game?
Yeah, sort of how do they compare with other winter contests? Are people more absorbed? Are they more critical? What do you think?
Okay, people are definitely more critical, and there is no discussion about that. The media and more generally the French opinion is welcoming these games with very high level of criticism. And it's because of the cost of the games that you've mentioned, also the corruption associated with the games. Some opponents to President Putin talk to up to 22 billion euros of money invested, which was just, you know, about corruption. It's also because of the figure of Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin in France is someone people, you know, the general public don't really appreciate. And because there is such a high level of personalized, Putin is so much an important figure over these games, he might gain so much political momentum over these games. And so there is also a high level of criticism over the personality of President Putin.
Right. Fred, you've written about that, the kind of cult of Putin and what's fair and what's not. You've also written Western journalists have engaged in a good deal of arguably trivial sniping at alleged shortcomings in Russia's preparations for the Sochi Winter Olympics. But is it all part of a Cold War-like campaign to deny Russian successes and slap down an emerging world power? So how would you answer that, Fred?
Well, that is what Vladimir Putin said. And I think it's bollocks. I think in that very article I go on to try to take that apart. And it seems to me that there was a lot of trivial stuff. If you send thousands of journalists to a place a week before the event is going to begin, for those who work for daily news organizations like I do, you know you've got to feed the beast. Mm-hmm. So they're going to go out and find stories. So they found all these really stupid stories about bad hotel rooms, drinking water, broken Coca-Cola machines, falling off doorknobs, really, really silly stuff. But once the games began, that all stopped. On the other hand, there were a lot of big issues about the games and the preparations for the games, the way people were removed from their homes, the way migrant labor was really brutally exploited, the cost overruns, and as the other guest mentioned, the vast corruption connected with it. A lot of issues that are the sorts of things that, I don't know about everybody, but I covered a lot of that, and I don't apologize, because that's part of the process. When a big event, international event, happens, people have to be informed about those controversies. And if you look back at other Olympics, I took a good look in that article about at London. Just do a Google search and you'll find that the British media just tore at the official preparations for the Games. They criticized every single aspect of it and probably got a lot of things to change in the process. Part of the story here in Russia is that Putin never had to face that kind of criticism at home. The Russian media has not covered most of those issues about the environment, about exploited labor, about corruption. They just do not touch it. And that gives him the luxury to blame foreigners. But as one who covered a lot of those things, I can tell you, my sources were all Russians.
All right, we'll dig more into that soon, Fred. I want to pull Rob into this because Rob said that he has nothing against the games, but if you look a little further than the stadium, you'll see a lot of different things. And you went on to say, I think it's important for people to know what's going on over there. That is part of this facade, the Putin show. And you spent 5 years in Sochi, Rob. Can you tell us some of these stories that you think people need to know?
Well, I think it's really important to place these Olympic Games in a bigger perspective than only the thing which is going on right now. I mean, these Olympic Games are so far very successful. There are not really big problems going on during the Games. There are no attacks going on during the game from the rebels or the terrorists, however you want to call them. So far the games are quite good, but the games are a kind of artificial bubble in the amidst in a conflict zone. So right over the mountains you have the North Caucasus, and to the south you have a breakaway Republic Abkhazia. And we believe it's important to place these games in a little bit of bigger perspective, to know what's going on behind these mountains, and to know that the same regime who's building these extremely expensive games, these $50 billion games, is also responsible for abductions right over the mountains, is also responsible for human rights violations going on over there. So I think it's important to know these stories, and I have to say I'm a little bit ashamed because our country sent the king and the prime minister to the Olympic Games, and we already had the recordings, the television recordings from Putin shaking hands with our king and asking him, like, what do you think about the games? And our king replied, like, they are fantastic. And then I think, like, okay, if a king is saying this to a man who's also responsible for these human rights violations, this corruption, all these negative things going on a stone's throw away from these Olympic stadiums, then I think that's quite a shame. So I think that's most important, that we place these games in a bigger perspective.
Placing the games in a bigger perspective. Well, let me bring Guillaume into this. What do you think is fair criticism, and how do you bring balance to covering something like these games? I mentioned that Stephen Cohen in The Nation had this very critical view of American media coverage, which he called the reporting on Sochi toxic coverage. He says Americans are left with a new edition of an old question. Has Washington's 20-year winner-take-all approach to post-Soviet Russia shaped this degraded news coverage, he asks. Go ahead and maybe respond to that, Guillaume. What do you think is fair criticism, and how critical should the coverage of the Sochi Games be, or the infrastructure?
Well, I agree with the fact that, I mean, definitely we are journalists and we are here to look at things how they are. And, you know, this is not the kind of job that you can easily do when you're a journalist in Russia. And that has been said by one of the speakers on the show. And you really have to mention that because we journalists from foreign countries can really come and basically do our job the way we want without having to fear to be fired. And we can talk about all the problems around these games, and it's been mentioned there have been problems with environment, there have been problems with Uzbekistan workers not being paid at all or being paid like only $1 an hour for working on the construction of the venues. We have to talk about how the lots of the things like this, and definitely this is an embodiment of how autocratic Russia is, and these games show that, and you have to say that. That being said, I believe there is a lot of Russia bashing around the games, and as it's been said, it's very easy for a journalist just to go in Sochi and to see that can machines don't work or that you have two toilets in the same room. That doesn't really bring much to the debate. That doesn't help me much as a citizen from foreign countries to help understand how these countries, where this country is going. And I have felt for the last weeks and the last months a lot of Russia bashing, as I would say. And, I'm French, and I know what French bashing is in other countries, such as the United States. So I feel like maybe the big debate could have been a bit more, nuanced and balanced at some point. Lots of things in how these games are going on show that, good things happening in Russia. Russia would not have been able to organize such games 20 years ago when it was just recovering from the collapse of the USSR. I think we have to recognize that President Putin was good enough in his job, while he's probably been in power for too long right now, but for the last years he's been good enough to be able to reshape the state, from a domestic viewpoint, and also to bring back to Russia its pride and a certain influence at the international stage. And these games exactly show that. And as French and as American citizens, we might be uncomfortable with the fact that Russia is back and that it might impair our own influence. But I think we have to recognize that.
And that is Guillaume Pitron. He's a Paris-based investigative journalist and documentary maker. His latest article is in Le Monde Diplomatique. Fred Weir is also joining us. He's the Moscow correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, and documentary photographer Rob Hornstra, whose latest work is The Sochi Project, telling the stories of Sochi, Russia. You're listening to the Friday Media Roundtable on Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and we're talking about media coverage of the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia. And we want to invite you to join our conversation. The number is 866-798-TALK. What do you think about coverage of Sochi? Have you learned about conditions in Russia because of the Olympics? And how do you think journalists should cover these big international competitions? Do you think that the criticism of these games is different from previous Olympics? 866-798-8255 is our toll-free number. Again, that number is 866-798-TALK. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And you can just leave comments on our websites, and we'll look for those at yourcallradio.org, where we have links to all of the articles that we're talking about today and the work of our guests. How do you think that, what do you want to hear about the geopolitics, the corruption, human rights, and LGBT concerns in Russia? And where have you seen the best reporting about Sochi this week? Again, the number is 866-798-TALK, and we'll go to calls in just a minute. But let me ask you guys about something that you were just talking about, the idea of Putin as an autocrat, that Sochi is a Putin project, and then there are stories that this couldn't have happened without Putin's leadership to make it happen. How are you viewing this kind of this idea? I think, Fred, you said visitors to Sochi this month will discover that Putin's promises have been spectacularly fulfilled. So the coverage of this as Putin's games, his win or his loss. How are you looking at that, Fred?
Well, sure. I think we can separate all these things and admit that all these different approaches are valid. And I completely would sign my name to what Dion just said. Russia has really created an amazing venue for the games. They spent like an enormous amount of money, money they'll probably miss in the years to come. But as a person who's regularly visited Sochi, I can tell you the place is transformed. And by all the coverage that's going on, you can see that the world is having a fantastic time. And now, the overwhelming bulk of the coverage is positive. It's about the games. It's about the teams. I'm a Canadian. I'm not a big sports fan, but I'm still just amazed at how the Canadians are doing. And so there are games, and Russia deserves credit for having put them on, to having created the secure bubble, as you like, but really, really fine facilities for this show, which belongs to all of us, to have happened. Nevertheless, it is very much Putin's project. He has, you may argue, and I think quite rightly, that he personally squired this whole project. He went to the IOC 7 years ago to pitch it. He's signed off on all the vast cost overruns. His fingerprints are all over it, and he sees it very much as part of his legacy. And for those of us who cover Russia regularly, we can't ignore that. You've got to analyze that aspect of it, and that's fair game.
And we only have a couple of minutes, but I want to see if Rob and Guillaume want to weigh in on that question about this idea of personalizing the games. Is that an accurate representation? Is that a fair narrative?
I totally agree with that.
That's Guillaume Pichon.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, I don't know if you might find a lot of head of states who have, defended, I mean, sustained the candidacy of Sochi to the IOC, speaking both in English and in French for the committee, and then who has supervised personally the works, and then who will be here during the games, and then we will, we expect to have the political gains associated to it right after this. I mean, it's 10 to 15 year period. You don't know in our modern world, not many head of states are able to cover such a long amount of time. So this is his baby, as they say in Sochi. Sochi is his baby. And he loves the city. He's very much attached to the city. He wants to have the city organized the way he wants because he has his own dacha. And he's very much, attached to it. It's really a matter of, he's loving it personally.
And that is Guillaume Pichon, who's a Paris-based investigative journalist and documentary maker. We're also joined by Fred Weir, who's the Moscow correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, and documentary photographer Rob Hornstra, whose latest work, The Sochi Project, tells the untold stories of Sochi, Russia. And Rob and his team spent 5 years documenting the people and the place around Sochi. We're talking about media coverage of the Winter Olympics, and we're asking you, what did you think about that coverage? What stood out for you? Did you think that some of the critical coverage was overkill? And has it changed the way that you look at Russia, geopolitics, human rights? What haven't you seen or heard covered that you'd like to? And if you're Russian, how do you compare U.S. and Russian coverage? You're listening to Your Call, and we'll be right back after this short break.
This is Your Call on local public radio. If you have a perspective that you haven't yet heard in today's discussion, or a question you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. It's toll-free call, 866-798-TALK. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment or question on the website, yourcallradio.org. And all of the discussions you hear on today's Media Roundtable will later be posted on the website as well.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. That's also where you can listen to past shows and find out what's coming up next. On Monday, we're going to air a special taped edition of Your Call about the presidential executive power. We'll have a conversation with Bruce Ackerman, a constitutional scholar and the author of We the People, the Civil Rights Revolution. We'll ask, does President Obama differ from his predecessors with regard to executive power? And on Tuesday, we'll talk about how the new Federal Reserve Chief, Janet Yellen, is faring and how what her plans for that office are. She says that unemployment will be one of her top priorities because the labor market is far from complete. So how will her policies differ from her predecessor, Ben Bernanke? And if you have a show idea for us, you can drop us a line at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, it's our weekly media roundtable, and we're talking with journalists about coverage of the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia. And if you want to join us, we'll have an open line soon at 866-798-TALK. Let us know what you're following, what coverage you've appreciated, and what you're not hearing. 866-798-TALK is our toll-free number. We're joined by Fred Weir, the Moscow correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, Guillaume Pitron, a Paris-based investigative journalist and documentary maker, and Rob Hornstra, who's also a photographer whose latest work, the Sochi Project, tells the story of Sochi, Russia. And let's go to our callers. Let's go to Peter in San Francisco. Hi, Peter. Welcome to your call.
Yes, I just had a question strictly about the media.
Yeah.
At this end, not the Sochi end, but in America, I feel like we're not getting very much information. And my question is, number one, why is it that there's only one network that's covering this, NBC, and number two, why is it that I understand that the live coverage is from midnight on because of the time zone difference, but the small coverage that we get during the day that is convenient for us at this end from NBC.
So you mean you're talking about the TV coverage, but doesn't one network always get exclusive rights to the Olympics? Isn't that just the norm?
I thought there had been more networks in the past, but in any case, we're certainly not. It took us 2 days before we could see the gold and silver medal.
Because of how they want to stack it in prime time. Well, Peter, I do know that it's always one that gets the exclusive rights for the U.S. I guess the question, though, would be, do they have the same limitations in Europe and in Canada, Guillaume, Rob, and Fred?
First for me, so yes, I would say they have the same in France. So this is only the public television, the French public television, who has the exclusive rights for the games, as far as I know. So I guess there are maybe the Channel 2 and the Channel 3, I would say that's the same way. It works the same way.
That you just have limited coverage that's in prime time, or do they have wall-to-wall 24-hour coverage?
I wouldn't know that. I don't know. The only maybe the advantage we have comparing to you guys, we are much closer in terms of jet lag. So, you know, we don't have to follow the games at 3 a.m. or something. So we can easily, you know, put on the TV at 8 a.m. and we're sure we're going to see something anyway.
And Fred, what's it like in Russia? Do you have it on all day, or what's the deal in Russia?
There is one channel covering it live. And, of course, the time zones line up better, at least here in Moscow and for the big central Russian cities. They are pretty much the same time zone as Sochi, and, of course, Russia is the host. But, yes, there is no shortage of it. You can switch on your TV and watch coverage of all the events as they're happening.
And let's go to another caller. Let's go to Harry in San Francisco. Hi, Harry.
Hi, yes, good morning. I was wondering, given all the things that are going on in Ukraine and Chechnya and other locations, what impression is the average Russian citizen getting from watching their media and learning their media? What is the stories being told them, and what do they actually believe? If they're not being told something about the Olympics, I wonder what they are aware of about what's going on with these conflicts.
Yeah, let's hear how that's covered. Fred, you're in Moscow. What is the coverage of Georgia, the Ukraine, Chechnya, all of these struggles? What's the coverage like in Russia?
Well, I personally lived 5 years in the Soviet Union, and I remember that. And I can say that now there's a much broader media, and technology has changed, so we have a fairly wide open internet, so that, and the Russian internet is quite vast and unrestricted. So for people who want to seek out information on just about any subject, it's possible. On the other hand, we have almost Soviet-like main TV channels, which are where most Russians draw their news from, and their news coverage, their nightly news programs, for instance, remind me of those in the Soviet Union. They're very narrow, they're very opinionated, or slanted, and they do not provide any breadth of opinion. For Russians who draw their views, their political views, their views about world events, and especially events like what's going on in Ukraine now, they will get a very one-sided point of view. But as I said, for the Sochi Olympics, it's all Olympics all the time, at least for this couple of weeks coming up.
And let me invite our listeners again to join our conversation about media coverage of the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia. What have you appreciated? What do you feel like you're missing? What do you think about the critical eye given to the development around Sochi, human rights, and workers' rights? 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255 is our toll-free number. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio, and you can post comments at yourcallradio.org, which is where you'll find links to all of the work of our guests today. So Fred was talking about some of the local coverage of the geopolitics in Ukraine and in Georgia and in Chechnya, and saying that there isn't very much coverage in Russian media, but you can go on the internet and get a lot. Fred also reported on the local reaction to the development around Sochi from people living there, and said that there was open hostility to the games expressed by many local inhabitants. Rob, you were there for 5 years. You traveled all around the surrounding regions. What did you hear when you stepped out of Sochi?
You mean the opinion of people?
People living there, local people, yeah. The games and the development.
Well, I mean, Sochi is a summer resort, and people are mostly working in summer tourism to earn their money as summer tourism. So they were, what we heard, they were worried, especially in the 5-6 years before the games already, because they knew that their city would be completely covered with dust. And all construction work, so they were afraid that the tourists wouldn't come to Sochi, and partly they were right in the past 6 years. And now they are still afraid, because they are afraid that the prices of Sochi became too high, and that that it should attract only the rich Russians, but rich Russians do not want to go to Sochi. They go abroad. They go to the French Alps, and they go to Switzerland and those kind of places. Or they go to cheaper places like Egypt or Turkey or Thailand, where you get better service for less money. So the people in Sochi, actually, what we heard, are not so positive or not so happy about the games. And it could be, of course, that they are right now before the games. Now the games start, that they are quite proud on having the games in Sochi. And some of them told it as well to us, that they are proud that everybody in the world knows where Sochi is right now, so that's a good effect of the games in Sochi. But they are especially afraid that the town will be transformed from a summer tourist town into a winter tourist town, and it will never be a winter tourist town because it's a tropical. So yeah, they're a little bit afraid of what will happen in the future.
Well, let me ask about that, this tropical climate. Why was Sochi chosen? I think, Guillaume, you said two-thirds of Russia is frozen under permafrost. Why organize these games in the tropic? I think a lot of people have been asking that question. In one of your reports, I read that the only way they were able to have snow there was for 2 years they were stockpiling warehouses of snow to cover the mountains. So why did it end up in Sochi, and was that a good decision? Let's start with you, Guillaume.
You're perfectly right. It's very counterintuitive to think that the Sochi Games, the Winter Games, are organized in the summer capital of Russia. You can't believe it at first sight. And you got to be there in November. I was there last November. The temperature was 20 degrees. The people were, you know, swimming in the Black Sea, and you're just like, they're going to organize such games here. I can't believe it. Now, what you have to think is that the mountains are just 50 kilometers away, and that the snow over there is excellent. They enjoy very good snowing conditions. They have also infrastructures very good ones. They have developed an amazing network of ski resorts, which actually are, you know, competing to what we have in our own country, in France, in the Alps. How would you, I mean, that was just, you know, it was impossible for Russia to think about organizing such games in the middle of Atlas. There's nothing over there. You've got one people per square kilometer. There's nothing. And actually, beyond beyond this counterintuitive thinking, when you look behind the curtains, actually, this is a very good place. This is a beautiful place where the mountains join the sea. It's geographically just amazing. And also, this is a place where you have good climatic conditions in the mountains, which are very close by to the sea. And this is a place which President Putin, once again, loves very much.
All right. Let's go to another caller. Let's go to Antonio in San Leandro. Welcome to your call, Antonio.
Good morning. Yes, I think that the coverage of the media in the United States was really shameful. Before the Olympics, they were talking about bomb plots, bomb in two space tubes, and a whole bunch of threats. And then when that didn't happen, then they came with locked in a bathroom, and every stupid thing that they can figure it out, and to finish it up, then Obama sends a provocation with his gay delegation there, trying to raise another issue more. And that's really shameful. And the media in general, all of them, actually have joined.
All right. Well, let's get a response. Why don't we start with you, Fred? So Antonio's calling the coverage in the U.S. shameful, and especially the potential terrorism threats, calling those overblown.
Okay. Well, again, separate things out. I don't know about the toothpaste tubes and so on. I squirmed a bit at some of the things my colleagues were writing, trivial sniping, carping. But there are big cultural and geopolitical issues between Russia and most of the developed world, including our countries. That includes things like gay rights. They are burning issues, important issues, and Sochi became the spotlight on Russia. Putin invited that, by the way. It's not. He has nothing to complain about because he said Sochi will be the showcase of the new Russia. That was part of his Olympic pitch in the first place. So it's a fair cop. And as one who covers Russia on a daily basis, this is what I do. I try to illuminate these issues. I don't think it was wrong for quite a number of groups, including Human Rights Watch, to take the Sochi Olympics as an example or as an opportunity to publish fairly in-depth reports about LGBT issues and so on. And we, the press, did cover it.
And we did that in Beijing, and we have done that in other regions. I don't know that the press was all that skeptical when the games were in Utah. But you write a lot about, Fred, the growing ethnic strife within Russia, not even just in the outlying regions, but also even in the centers of town now in Moscow, because so many people are leaving and coming to the cities. What is security like, both in Sochi and just in Russia in general?
Yeah, that is another thing. There is a simmering insurgency that has made much of the North Caucasus zone a no-go zone for foreign journalists, for anybody. There is a sort of low-level civil war going on in many parts of the North Caucasus. Fortunately, a mountain range separates those parts of the North Caucasus from Sochi, and a huge security operation, like just massive, probably one of the most massive in history, has created this bubble within which Sochi Olympics are taking place. Well, thank goodness that it is so. But that fact, this unresolved civil war inside Russia, is not some kind of anti-Russian propaganda. It's a very serious abiding problem this country has. And a lot of the refugees from that turmoil down there come to Moscow. Terrorists also come. We saw in Volgograd less than 2 months ago that string of bombings.
Killing 40 people, right?
Yes, very, very much a part of Russian reality. And the police response, often very heavy-handed, using ethnic profiling and really crude methods, they crack down. We also have quite, here in Moscow, like really large scale immigration from the former Soviet republics of Central Asia. They come to find work. I mean, they come from really impoverished places to the relative prosperity of Moscow, and it is so. And they take jobs, like in construction, in services, and so on. But they become the victims of discrimination and police crackdowns. And so on. So we have all these problems in Russia. They're part of what a journalist has to cover, Sochi or no Sochi. But it's true that the world turns its attention to Sochi, and some people get irritated hearing all this stuff. They just like to hear about the athletics. I sympathize with that. But there it is.
Rob, how difficult was it for you? You spent 5 years in and around Sochi. How difficult was it for you to get access to do the reporting? What kinds of restrictions were there on journalistic freedom?
Well, working in Sochi in the beginning was quite easy, and we didn't have the feeling that we were followed or whatever. So we could work quite freely in Sochi. Of course, it's difficult to get into the Olympic bubble, but it's kind of protected all the time. But working in the North Caucasus, is extremely difficult, and you really have to imagine that the North Caucasus almost starts from where they now have the mountain cluster. It's a very difficult region. You are followed by the security services of the Russians. We have been arrested multiple times. In the end, it also led to the fact that our visas are rejected, so we're not allowed to work in Russia anymore, and that's a little bit the policy of the Russian government.
You were denied a visa in July, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, it will happen to all foreign journalists who are working in the North Caucasus and who are covering all this violence and writing about it and writing about human rights violations. You can be sure that your visa will be denied the next time. And of course, maybe you can say that that's not the biggest problem, because fortunately, we as foreign journalists can go back. And it's our task. We have to write about these problems going on very close to Sochi. Russian journalists, it's much more difficult for them to work in this region, because they cannot go, become a refugee somewhere abroad, but usually they have to go home to Moscow or somewhere in the North Caucasus where they live, and their family is being threatened, and they are being threatened. And at a certain point, as a critical journalist inside Russia, you will stop working on these kind of topics, or you will die, which also happened a few times in the past 10 years.
Yeah, a lot of people are talking about reporting on Sochi as one of the most dangerous places to report as a journalist. Will you say that you were arrested multiple times? Were there repercussions for your Russian sources in talking to you? Was that a fear?
Well, that's a very good question. Fortunately, we are like slow journalists, documentary makers, so we return every time to the same place, so we follow the people we have been interviewing, and we still follow them, but not now, because we can't enter Russia. We do it via assistance in Moscow and in the Caucasus itself. Yes, we know that some people have been threatened, not threatened by being shot or whatever, but threatened, for example, that they say, like, oh, your nephew has a job at police. Well, maybe next time don't talk to journalists, because your nephew will be absolutely lose his job. But what also happened, for example, we made a book about specifically the North Caucasus, which was published a year ago. And four people from this book have been killed already in the past years. These are people usually talking to journalists, and they decide they want to talk to journalists. They think it's really important that they can get their voice out, that their stories are covered. Usually people from the Salafist community, for example, the strong Orthodox Islam community.
Wait, you say that they were killed. Who were they killed by, Rob?
Well, that's a very difficult question, but if you trace down what happens, these people are usually killed by black jeeps without number plates, and there are masked men stepping outside these jeeps,
So it's sort of death squad.
Officially, you can't say who it are, but everybody there knows that it's the secret service of the Russian government. And it has been proven as well by the Human Rights Court in Geneva. I don't know exactly the English translation for it. Sometimes people make a court case out of it and go to the European court and they win these kind of cases. So the Russian government has to pay these people or their families money back, which they also do, but they still keep it silent for the press.
Well, Rob, let me ask a sort of underlying question that gets at this. My understanding is that one of the reasons it's been so dangerous for journalists and sources to be reporting on this is that there is allegedly so much corruption going on with the development. So let's talk just a little bit about the transformation of Sochi and what that means for the region and for Russia longer term. Guillaume, you were writing a lot about this and about kind of the nuances of all of this development. A lot has been written about the huge cost of this Olympics, but one of the things that you say is that there actually has been a lot of infrastructure created and that these large-scale projects with an international spotlight are in some ways a way to have less corruption and more actual development or use of this money to build infrastructure. Can you just dig down a little bit on that for us, Guillaume?
Yes, well, definitely there's been huge changes for the last 5 or 6 years in Sochi. Sochi used to be, a small village, even, a couple of decades ago, and now it's become like an international city, and it's changed a lot, and people in town are happy about it for some of them because it brought, the works, brought back new electricity systems, new sewage systems. On the other hand, huge towers have been built right in the forefront of the city, and now it's just become totally, it's really ugly, I should tell you. There's, these huge buildings should not have been built, actually. Some of them have been built without any working, any building permit, but they are here. The most interesting thing is, what's going to happen with the venues? You have like huge Olympic venues now here. In October, there will be a Formula One championship coming up. And now they want to have Sochi used as one of the 10 cities welcoming the 2018 Soccer World Cup. The question is, they have built so much. They have built so much for developing the city, also for developing the region, because they want to bring more peace in the region, in the North Caucasus region. But what will happen with all this? Will they be able to bring foreign tourists as they expect? Will they be able to create a economic sense for these dozens of billions of dollars which have been invested? And this is where the problem is because there has been no economic strategy whatsoever for making sure that all this money invested will not only serve a certain image that Russia wants to bring at the international stage, but will also benefit the people on the ground, the economy. And I think we got to go for another show, you and I and the two other guests, next year or in the two next years, to figure out what will exactly happen in the future. And I'm not very optimistic about it.
Well, that's a great idea, and we'll put that onto our calendar to do. Well, Fred, what do you think the pros and cons of all this development are in the longer term? What happens to Sochi after the games?
Well, apparently Putin is consciously pursuing a strategy of using these great big events to drive infrastructure development in regions. This is a Russian way, when foreigners come, everybody runs and jumps and prepares and repaves roads and everything. It was that way in Soviet times, too. And to some extent, it is working. I don't think in Sochi they'll be sorry that they have a new international airport, a new sewage system, and a new seaport. A couple of years ago, Russia spent $22 billion to hold an APEC summit in Vladivostok, and the city got quite a lot of infrastructure out of that. The thing is, a lot of white elephant infrastructure gets built, too.
What is that?
For Sochi, for instance, there is a new road and a railroad going up to Krasnaya Poliana, which is where the winter events are being held, which cost nearly $10 billion to build. And I know that before that, there was a perfectly good Soviet-era road up to Krasnaya Poliana. But this new road and rail link can carry 20,000 people an hour up to a ski resort, which most of the year has no snow. So
that's a kind of white elephant. This is infrastructure that is...
That stuff's not going to have any use after the Olympics are over. And there's quite a bit of that. And apparently we now have the 2018 World Cup coming up, which is another going to be another huge potlatch of federal spending. Initial budget for
We'll continue to cover that. I'm sorry to say that we're out of time for today. Fred Weir is the Moscow correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. He was joined by Guillaume Pitron, who's an investigative journalist and documentary maker. His latest piece, The Sochi Games, appears in the latest edition of the English Le Monde Diplomatique, and we'll have a link to that at yourcallradio.org. We'll also have a link to Rob Hornstra's beautiful documentary project, The Sochi Project. He spent 5 years in and around Sochi, Russia. Thank you all for joining us. I apologize we didn't have more time. We will try to have you back a year from now to find out what did happen to Sochi a year after. Links to all of this are at yourcallradio.org. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. How is the president using his executive power? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with constitutional scholar Bruce Ackerman, who is the author of We the People, the Civil Rights Revolution. He says President Obama has forgotten the Constitution in formulating his policy on the NSA, and that this is a good time to consider serious reform. So how does President Obama's use of executive power differ from his predecessors? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.